Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete. What's up?
And we are What's Up All Day because we are bringing you all the best comics that are coming out on this day, this Wednesday. And we're kicking it off with blood, with our blood block, the final blood block, Pete, because I got bad news. The blood hunt is done, son.
No! You are
done. The summer sun is burning us all down. But we're kicking off with Blood Hunt number 5 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Pepe Larraz. The Blood Hunt has been going for quite some time. The Avengers.
Or not long enough, depending on who you ask. I mean, there's nothing worse than when you're thirsty for a blood hunt and then it ends, you know what I mean? And then you still got that bloodthirst, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's like when you're at a party and the keg is kicked at like 9, you're like, now, I'm talking about the blood keg, naturally. What are you going to do with the rest of the night?
Yeah, exactly.
Just a quick recap on Blood Hunt. We had the Avengers face down some super vampires, super interesting and scary. Then for many issues, they did some other stuff. And now we learned about a villain whose name is Varney, who is not who you might be scared of, because Varney is
the Carney, dude. Why are you mad at Varney, dude?
Before we get into the review, so Varney has possessed Blade's daughter, Bloodline.
Smart move.
Yes, Blade. If you're gonna get a vampire, get after that.
If you're gonna jump in anybody's body, why not Blade? Because he's a badass. You know what I mean? So I think it's a pretty smart move.
And I say this, and I mean this with every breath of this comment. But some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill, and that's Varney. That's Varney, I would say here.
You're right.
I mean, honestly, Varney has a lot of Steven Dorff energy from the original Blade, where you're sort of like, this is the villain? Okay. But anyway, so Blood Hunt brings the Blood Hunt to a close. Pete, how did you feel about the way this came to an end?
This is an exciting issue, a real fun comic, great action, love the art. Doom being Doom, just dooming it the fuck up, dude. I absolutely loved it. And, you know, spoilers, if you haven't read it, but, you need the Sorcerer Supreme, and, you know, Doctor Strange is a ghost version. So Doom's like, listen, just make me the Sorcerer Supreme, and then when I save the day, you can have it back. You know what I mean? No big deal. I swears.
It's like all the other tacos at Taco Bell are like, make me a supreme, make me add a little sour cream right underneath, right by the meat, And that's what Doom did.
But and I just think that that's such a classic kind of villain. That's like, you know, the bully at your school is like, oh, cool, you got a new whatever, let me see it. And you're like, I know I shouldn't give this to him because he's never going to give this back to me. But well, there you go.
And so this is getting into spoilers for the comic. But Varney is dispensed with pretty easily in this issue. Blade lives. The big repercussion out of this is that Doom is the Sorcerer Supreme. Doctor Strange willingly gives up. Clea's like, hey, man, this guy's bad. And Doctor Strange's like, you can always trust Doom. I was like, this is... this is ridiculous. And then,
yeah, he's a total villain, but if he gives me his word, I'm sure it's going to be, you know.
And Doom technically keeps his word, but of course he messes around. I also love he's like, okay, you can be Sorcerer Supreme, and he gets all the power, but he also gets like, he has to wear a second cape. Like he adds a cape doubles to Doom. It up.
You got to double it up once you're Sorcerer Supreme. You double the capes, man.
I mean, it's summer.
Double the duty, double the capes.
It's summer. You just finished a blood hunt. You're hot. You're sweaty. You need to take your summer cape, your lighter, airier cape. And this guy's got a Supreme cape on top of his Doom cape? That's a lot of cape.
Yeah. Hey, if anybody can pull it off, it's Doom. You know what I mean? Already in a tin suit. You know what I mean? It's already hot in there. You know what I mean?
He's like in an oven, and he's wrapping a blanket around it. Two blankets. Yeah. That's the thing. We think capes are all light and airy because they're flying. Superman. It looks like fun. That's like wearing a blanket all day.
It's a great idea. If you love blankets, you know what I mean? Come on.
You would wear a cape just for the warming? Or would you wear a cape just regular? Just like a regular cape?
I don't know.
Probably I got my wife like a cape for a Christmas one year.
Oh, yeah?
Never wore it. It was really cool.
I mean, who... Did you expect her to wear a cape around?
We were in winter. It's wintry. It's like when you're dressed up in winter. It's winter. I guess we don't have winter much.
When is it okay to wear a cape? When it's cold outside? You can just wear a cape?
Yes.
Why not a jacket?
Capes weren't invented for superheroes. People were wearing capes. Capes first. Capes came first. And then they added capes.
Capes were first?
Capes were first.
Oh.
Don't let anyone tell you that Superman invented a cape. That'd be even crazier if superheroes were like, you know what we need? Back blankets. No, capes were around first.
Back and, blankets.
And then all of a sudden it just
that's
became...
That's the fun of a blanket is you just wear it as a cape. You know what I mean? And then you were like, where's my blanket? Oh, yeah. Right here.
It's here.
Yeah.
Fall asleep on the job. Anyway.
That's the hard part is if you had a cape, you would be sleeping a lot. You know what I mean?
Exactly
You'd right. always be snuggly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, here's one of the big takeaways for me is Miles Morales now a vampire.
Yes, I was surprised by that because I feel like Marvel throughout this entire Blood Hunt event has been pretty fast and loose with like, you're a vampire. Okay, now you're not. Let's go back to normal. But they're leaving Miles a vampire, which is especially, I don't know, Miles in general as a character feels like they've given him this sword. Sort of his sting sword lately. And that's a big departure from Spider-Man and all of that. And now a vampire. So they're really playing around with Miles. It's fun.
I like it. I like the fact that Miles is in the mix. You know what I mean?
I agree.
I'm not sure about the vampire take, but whatever. I'm glad when Miles is around. You know what I mean?
Same. I just think it's interesting that it feels like they're searching for another iteration for him. And like I don't think I love the Miles character as was, but like the fact that we're playing around is still fun. It just feels like a surprising choice to me a lot.
And what did you think about kind of Doctor Strange being like, hey, since this is something that you've planned for, you know, in case you need to turn in the Sorcerer Supreme and you've got this plan already, did you plan this from the beginning? Which I thought was an interesting question.
And I had called that Doom is actually the secret villain of all of this. I can't give myself full credit for a perfect call there. But the fact that the major news coming out of this is Doom is going to run the world. Because to give the full spoil on it, it's Doom says he makes a deal with Doctor Strange. Like when the world is safe, when he solved the problem, I'll give you the Sorcerer Supreme back. And he's like, I haven't solved all the problems. So it's Doom redoing the world. Is going to be the big event coming up through the fall. So that's going to be – it's a very interesting timed with the announcement of Robert Downey Jr. playing Doom.
Yeah.
We're heading into
– Doom time.
It's Doom time. We're heading into the Doom times.
That seems scary. You know what I mean?
The end is nigh of not having Doom around. But let's move into our second comic in the Bloodhound block. Probably the last Bloodhound book we will talk about. Fantastic Four number 22, also from Marvel, written by Ryan North with art by Ivan Fiorelli. I love this comic. I love the way they that Ryan North used the Bloodhound event to just tell a really great Reed story. Reed and Alicia story, to be fair. Like, it's a great duo of that. They're two characters that don't spend a ton of time together or talking to each other anyway. And I thought, I just love this story. I love seeing Reed be the best version of himself here. I thought it was fantastic.
Pete. Yeah, it was enjoyable. I liked the use of the Human Torch and all that kind of stuff. You know, it sucks that Grimm is just this workhorse who's got to push people around. That was a little heartbreaking. But I did really...
Heartbreaking? He's big dude.
Yeah, I know, but it's you can't give him any more jobs than just the manual labor.
If you were wearing roller skates all the time, and I was like, oh, who's going to hurry over there and pick up our ice cream? I'd be like, well, Pete, you got the roller skates.
I'd be like, go fuck yourself. I'm not your fucking personal assistant. Yeah, get your own ice cream.
It's a hot day. The ice cream's melting. And you can get those skates. You can be there and back. The ice cream's still fresh.
You can get on a skateboard. You can get on
skateboard.
Bike.
The ultimate advantage on roller skates. We're talking roller skates.
Whatever, dude. That's bullshit. Just because a guy's made of rock doesn't mean he's your personal assistant. Anyways, I thought, Mr. F dropping the F-bomb at the end of it was fun. And I also thought it was hilarious that Doom's like, don't worry, there's going to be a lot of announcements coming. Doom's going to be on the TV every day, giving speeches, talking to people about how many groceries they should be buying, how many pairs of shoes are too much to own. You know what I mean? He's really going to get into, abusing his power. It's going to be a crazy world moving forward.
He's a micromanager. And everyone knows that in Latveria, you can only have six pairs of shoes. That's just the way they are.
That's one of the reasons I haven't moved there yet. Because I love the safety. Because Doom's going to keep it safe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you love the sort of castle and hutch.
Who doesn't like a nice castle? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like moving to the Magic Kingdom, except it's run by a maniac who could kill you, or one of his robots might accidentally kill
you. Or Mickey. You know what I mean?
Wow, interesting. Careful, Disney's listening. Let's move on to talk about. Let's jump over to the other side of the pond with DC Comics' major event, Absolute Power Task Force 7 number 3, written by Jeremy Adams with art by Marco Santucci. This book is, we're sort of just jumping around to a lot of different things, peeps, heroes in the middle of this event, where you have Amanda Waller's Amazobots are going around stealing powers. And I gotta say, though, I really like the way they're using these Amazos. We've gotten some sort of poetic stuff in a couple issues. We've gotten, in this issue, we get an Amazobot that sort of becomes sentient through his taking not only hero's power, but their sort of heart.
Yeah, I mean, this blows. Amanda Waller is winning, and this isn't fun to watch. Watch a robot grow feelings, I guess, is interesting, but not really.
Pete, that's what's happening in our actual world, too. So.
Yeah, I'm not boo. You know what I mean? I'm plugging them all, those fucking bastards. You know what I mean?
Oh, nice. Your headphones just shut down.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Your computer's shutting down.
I'm sure. I just think that, I'm rooting for robots here. What's the fun in that? You know what I mean? I hope the robot realizes humans have good things too, and it doesn't murder us all.
Wow, you just hate Amanda Waller.
How is this fun, dude?
I thought it was I really like the sort of transformation the Amazobot goes through. And I like DC does a great job with their books. They've done it through a ton of their crossovers over the years, 52, all of those where it was just so many stories happening. They just have a good in-house style of jumping between adventures and heroes doing little things. And I think that's why I like this particular title. It is jumping around through a lot of different things, touching little parts of the world that the larger title can't hit.
Well, okay. I mean, I'll also agree with you that I think DC does a great job with its comics, for sure. Just not every event hits in certain ways. Maybe this will win me over by the end. But what I'm also really worried about is, like, what is going to make it okay that Green Arrow ditched his whole family? Because yeah. I'm racking my brain. Like, if he goes, oh, I was under whatever, I'm going to be like, well, you better fucking fight. Go and ask for your family's forgiveness, because this is fucking bullshit, man.
I don't think so. I think he has a philosophical sort of agreement with Amanda Waller, and that's what we saw in the.
But
the
that Green doesn't Arrow agree. That doesn't mean you get to leave your family on red like that. Wake up in the middle of the night and just peace and just bounce.
That's what I'm saying. It's an interesting part of the story. It's very funny to me that you hate Amanda Waller and love Varney on Bloodhunt, who was just like a. We didn't learn anything super interesting.
Varney the Carney is fun, dude. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Amanda Waller is a great villain because she is winning. And the heroes are in a bad spot. We'll never agree on this, and that's just fine.
Dude, what is fun about somebody whose superpower is they're just evil as fuck and will manipulate whoever the fuck, a child, a robot, she doesn't give a fuck, or... You have somebody like Varney who's like, I'm taking away the sun, motherfuckers. Woohoo! Vampires rule the night. That's fun. I'm having a blast with that. That's a blood hunt. That's woohoo! This is just like, yay, corporations win. And what the fuck are we doing?
We're on two different sides, I guess, here, Pete. And you are on Varney's side in the blood hunt. You want vampires to Team suck Varney, the blood out of everyone. And but you hate Amanda Waller, so I guess you're with Super. Oh, look at that. Let's move on and talk about X-Force number one. Also from, this is from Marvel, written by Jeffrey Thorne, art by Marcus Toe. We've had a lot of new X books coming. Mm-hmm. This is another one.
I mean, it's labeled New Beginnings.
Yeah. You love X-Force. I would say they're maybe, I don't want to speak for you, maybe your favorite X-Team often, because there's the title that was just Sharps, just all the Sharp guys for a while.
Don't try to cut me down, bro.
Not cutting you down, ironically cutting you down by talking about how you love Sharps. But so this is a brand new X-Force team.
Having height-accurate Wolverine, you know what I mean? Speaking of cutting people down, you know what I mean? I felt that shot, you know what I mean? I felt that shot at me.
See, Pete talking about the Deadpool and Wolverine movie where his dream of her so long has came true, and they showed a short Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine.
And they were like, this is what you wanted, asshole? This is what you thought was cool?
Honestly, when I was watching the movie, that part I was like, wow, it's like the movie came and kicked Pete right in the nuts. Like the movie stepped out, pointed at you, and was like, you, in your face.
I represent a certain nerd population of height-accurate, Glavin, Wolverine supposed to be, you know.
You're a 5'2 truther. You want Wolverine be his full height of 5'2".
I think it's 5'3", but okay, I hear you.
Wow. Oh, nice. Wow. See, look, you're trying to get it. See, that's you want a tall Wolverine. You want a 5'3".
No, I know, bro. I'm just trying to be accurate.
But let's talk about this comic. We have a new X-Force team made up of – go ahead.
Yeah, I was hoping to – yeah. So I think that this is like a fun – and spoilers. We're going to spoil this, but – I was like, you know, they said new beginning, and I was like, okay, I hope so, because it would be nice. It would be nice to get a new beginning here, and I think they did an interesting job. I like how it started. It was funny because it was like, hey, Forge is a big deal, okay? Like, a lot of people think Forge is a big deal, so we're bringing that up again. And I like how Marvel's like, listen, if there's a problem that you're having – we just throw Deadpool at it. You know, the sponsor's like destroying. They're like, I just throw Deadpool at it. That's what we do when we're in trouble. We'll just, Deadpool will save us.
It felt a little cheap to have Deadpool in here, because here's the team we have. We've got Forge, Sage, Surge. First off, a lot of soft G.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's fun.
We have Betsy Braddock. Sort of the more British, the British one of the two Psylocks. And then we have, We have formerly Phoenix, Rachel Summers, I believe is what she goes by these days. And then a new character named Tank, who shows up with Deadpool, and we know nothing about him except he just is big and doesn't talk. No mouth.
It's a great nickname, Tank, though. It's, I love people named Tank. Yeah, you don't mean a tank that you don't like, really. I also think that it's just funny that Deadpool is such a cure-all. You know what I mean? Of like...
Yes, and of course Deadpool is thrown in there. I want this book to establish what it is because it's sort of serious. I like Forge as a leader. He is dedicated. Yeah, he has sort of a marble, a little magic marble that shows where events are happening. And Forge is sort of no nonsense here. He lets Deadpool go down essentially in this issue because he's like, nope, we're moving on. So this does have the energy and dynamic push of that X-Force book should. And that's good. These characters are an interesting batch. There's a little bit of everyone's very serious now. Like Forge and Sage on a team, I'm like, they're almost the same. What are we doing here? So I think that might be meaningful at some point. I hope so. And who do you think? I feel like Tank's going to be revealed to be a character we already know at some point.
Ooh, interesting.
Guido is what I'm going to guess.
Ooh, I like that. I think this is a solid first issue. I think they do a good job of like kind of getting you excited of what's to come. I do think it's hilarious how Forge was like, you know, when I'm stressed out, I like to make a marble. You guys should check out hobbies. Pretty interesting thing to do, you know.
And I want to be at Forge. It's Marvel Comics, not Marvel Comics. Let's move on and talk about Ultimate Spider-Man number 7, also from Marvel Comics, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Marco Cicchetti. This is Ultimate Universe has been sort of playing around with some of our favorite heroes, as they're always doing. This has been a take that I feel like we've really liked on this show, where Peter Parker's a little older, married with kids. He's befriended Harry Osborn, who is in the Green Goblin armor. And we're sort of – this issue is about a little bit of the fallout of them revealing themselves to each other as crime fighters, potentially, just people with superpowered armor. And then this issue is a lot about how their armor works. And I think Jonathan Hickman does a really smart thing, and with Otto Octavius, the ultimate Otto Octavius is sort of helping them out here, and he's just helpful. So shouts to him. Really chilled out here. But the issue does a whole thing here where they're activating an AI in each of their suits, and they choose whose voice or what personality they want in each one. Peter Parker chooses himself, so he will be having himself talking to him when he's doing in his armor. And Harry chooses his dad. Now,
problematic.
What I like this is a nice riff on Green Goblin is like a multiple personality situation, right? The Green Goblin is evil. We'll talk about the Amazing Spider-Man issue that came out this week in a little bit, where there's a lot of that happening. But this is a way to sort of ground that idea that Harry Osborn is going to have his dad's voice in his head at all times. And in this issue, when he's sort of play fighting with Spider-Man, he already steps over the line. I think that's such a smart...
His dad pushes him to that, though. But it felt like his dad was pushing him to be the bad guy in the Green Goblin we all know and hate.
But that's what I'm saying. It's a smart way. It's a smart iteration of that, the Green Goblin being evil and having a voice in his head pushing him to be evil. Yeah, that's such a smart way to do that.
I don't think I would use the word smart. I think what it is it's like it's problematic, or it's like you're saying smart in a way that like if his dad can't get to him, then he is really kind of like a great superhero in the fact that not even his dad can push his buttons. Because right now it's like, hey, we're play fighting, but when his dad starts pushing his buttons, he takes it way over the line and shows that he is easily manipulated, which makes me think he's not that good of a superhero. So I thought it was just very problematic. No offense to my father, but that would be the last person I want in my head being like, you know, do this, do that. Yeah. It would just fucking piss me off, you know. So
should I get some more donuts? No. So we also have a couple other iterations here that are different. We have Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy are sort of hanging out here a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then we have Uncle Ben hanging out with J. Jonah Jameson, which is also interesting, just sort of mashup, something we've never seen in the main universe. And then you mentioned a character that I know you call Kingpin, but I think we on the show have agreed that his name is Thick Wilson.
He is also
in this issue.
So to kind of say a little bit of how I feel about this comic, this Ultimate Spider-Man, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like when you say put Ultimate, you know what I mean? Like, I like things turned up to 11. Like, having Doc Ock.
It doesn't go that high. It only goes to 10.
Yeah, well, no, that's not true. It goes to 11. No, having Doc Ock just be a helpful creeper in the background, I don't know what we're doing with that. You know what I mean? So, like, right now I'm not feeling very Ultimate. I feel like it's just doing some tweaks here and there, which I think will have bigger Hickman loves to play chess, so you know what I mean? Like, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg here. But right now I'm just kind of like, what are we doing? These are just characters we know slightly changed a little bit. I did love the Kingpin stuff where it was just like, yeah, if I wanted to fucking take out Spider-Man, I would, and I can. I got him right where I fucking want him. And I felt like that was such a cool Kingpin moment. And I was like, again, like, I feel like this is just the Kingpin I know and love. I don't feel like this is Ultimate Kingpin. So,
well, but I think, so you're saying it's not Ultimate, it's more Intimate comics.
Yeah. I feel like we're doing Intimate Spider-Man characters. So I think, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because Hickman is very smart and does things in impressive ways that will go way over my head. So I probably should just shut the fuck up and wait for more stuff to happen. But right now I'm feeling a little underwhelmed. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I think this is very exciting. I can't wait to find out what happens.
Is amazing, though.
Marco Cicchetti art is fantastic. Come on. Agreed. Come on. Let's jump over and talk about Department of Truth number 24 from Image Comics. This is written by our guy JT4, James Tynan IV, with art by Martin Simmons. This comic has been slowly revealing the underside of this world, where Lee Harvey Oswald and other people, Frank Capra in this arc, are trying to change the beliefs or control the beliefs of people in the United States so that they can keep the country together, because in this world, the more people believe in something, it makes it real. And I love this comic. I think it's a great synergy between James's writing and Martin's art is really nice. It has just great conspiratorial energy between the writing and the art. And we've been really world building here with a mysterious woman in red is coming to a close, coming closer to the action. And we're getting to a big confrontation built around the Kennedy assassination. So really exciting time to be reading this comic. Pete, do you also enjoy this comic?
Well, first off, the real reason that I love this comic is the fucking art. The art is bananas good. It's un-effing believable. It's so creative. The, you know, iconic imagery that we've seen a thousand times of, you know, the JFK assassination done in such an interesting way on the cover. It's beautiful. It's creepy. It's magical. It's scary. It's all the things, and it's really impressive, the world that it pulls you into. And I just think it's so unique and creative and very cool. I think it speaks to you a little bit more than it does me, but man, I can't. I've been super impressed with this comic artistically, writing wise, idea wise. It's very creative and cool and different and unique and really, really something.
I think you'll apply a lot of those same adjectives, beautiful, creepy, awesome, scary, to this next comic as well, Pete. What if Donald Duck became Wolverine number one of no doubt many from Marvel Comics, written by Luca Barbieri, art by Giada Parisinato. So, Pete, you're our Wolverine correspondent. You're our short king Wolverine, man. Well, Wolverine just got a little shorter. He's duck-sized now.
Yeah.
Are you feeling good about that? We have a great cover here to this comic that I'm sure you would say. Iconic Wolverine finger cover. Pullery's waving you over to him. Except it's Donald Duck, and he's got marshmallows on the claws.
Yeah. I mean, this is cute. This is a fun idea. You know, well executed. I think it's adorable. I don't know if it's my cup of tea necessarily, but I really think artistically the different things they did with him throughout Wolverine's kind of history that they play with here is a fun idea. You know, having, you know, Donald just be this grumpy Wolverine is fun. It, you know, we need somebody with a temper. You know what I mean? Donald Duck is kind of famous for his temper a little bit. So I could see why they chose this. You know, I feel like maybe they're taking some shots at Wolverine that I don't appreciate, but, yeah, you know, this really is going to happen when Disney signed on. This is the nightmare that I thought would happen where it's like, now we got to see Donald Duck as Wolverine. And
this is the only Wolverine comic going forward.
You could go fuck yourself, man.
Here's the thing. I think Donald Duck would make a better Hulk.
I see the Beagles, though. I don't know what it is about seeing those guys, but
the Beagle Boys.
The Beagle Boys is fun.
Yeah, I agree. I love those guys. This comic does a sort of strange thing. I was saying Donald Duck tracks more with Hulk. Rage, he's just got a rage thing. I'd love to see those feathers pop. Really, like,
you saying Wolverine doesn't have a temper?
He's less of a temper. I feel like his temper, he goes berserker, but I don't think he's tempery. He's not like, he's not temper first, you know?
Okay.
This comic does an interesting thing where they name all the characters exactly using both sides of the name. For instance, it's like Donald Wolverine. Yeah. And then later you get Mickey Hawkeye when Mickey Mouse is dressed as Hawkeye. I was like, Mickey is right there. Mickey Mouse or something. Or Don Vereen or something.
Like, we got Halverine coming up later.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's a ways to do this that are – it's just very funny to me. Like, Donald Wolverine. It's like, we get it. They are joined up. We get Goofy as the Gray Hulk, which was funny to have him. So, I don't know. There's definitely – this is playing in a lot of the actual Marvel Universe. We get a ton of iconic Wolverine poses, except Donald Duck's in them. And then we get a real pivot to Scrooge at the end. How'd you feel about that?
Yeah, the Scrooge pivot.
Yeah. Classic Scrooge pivot.
I mean, that's the problem with Donald Duck. You know, he's like, you know, Scrooge is the richer, more famous, you know what I mean?
It's
tough.
And then at the coming up next, we have What If Donald Duck Became the Mighty Thor? And that one feels like a lot of fun. That one feels like...
That's more fun, you think?
I think so, because I think it can be Donald... Whoops, being like, whoops, I smashed this hammer into something, you know?
Yeah, but how much fun is this and how long will it go on is my question. Because, okay, fine, we're poking fun at Wolverine here and having some fun with Donald's history and, oh, look at these patch and all this kind of stuff, and Gray Hulk, but... We're going to do this with Thor. We're going to do this with Spider-Man. We're going to do this. You know what I mean? Like, it's just going to go around and.
Yeah, man. I got bad news. That's how the world and especially comic books work. Speaking of that, let's jump over to Super Pets Special by Bite Identity Crisis number one for DC Comics, written by Tony Fleeks, Michael Conrad, Dan Waters, Alexis Quasarano, Kyle Starks, artists, art by Christopher Mitten, Mike Norden, PJ Holden, and Sami Basri. This is a fun collection of your favorite DC animal characters doing stuff. Pete, how did you feel about this? Because I do think there's some fun stuff here. I really liked the Tony Fleeks Mike Norton story at the top. Yeah. It was really cool. How'd you feel about Jaro being considered a pet? Is he a super pet?
Yeah, I don't know about that. First off, like some amazing covers. You know, they really had some fun with this. I love the Who Wolfs the Wolfman. I thought that was really
very fun. Kyle Starks both wrote and drew that. Very fun.
I mean, it's the little cat from outer space. I mean, this is I thought it was a real fun take on the little prince from outer space. Get your shooting star and fly away.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought I love the art, love the touching story. And I just think some really fun ideas in here.
Yeah, and I highlighted the first Super Pets story where the Bite Wing joins the Super Pets in a fun way. Yeah. But I think you said the Dexstar story, the little cat story that before Who Woofs the Wolfman, I thought was really great and beautifully done. Beautiful. Love the art on that.
I also love the idea of like everybody's scared of this cat that's ripping through the universe, and you know, so they just kind of curls up with him. It's so. So adorable.
Cats just want to be purring. And are either of us a cat guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, Pete, you're the cat guy.
Got Puff the Fluff. I just feel that like cats are amazing, but they also are for destruction. You know what I mean?
Wow.
They're pro destruction, but they're also glorious as well. Now, so
you currently don't have a cat in your home, right?
Yeah, it's currently true, yes.
So what? Give us when can you make a promise to us here on the stack right now? When will a cat be? When will you have a cat in your home?
Oh, I don't know about that. I'm not going to.
I think soon. I think 6 months.
Let's
months, you're going to be puffing the fluff in your home. That's my prediction.
Oh, interesting. Let's not put stuff like that out there.
Very interesting. But put out there what? To the cats? They're going to start showing up. Are you worried about cats showing up at your door? Because I'll tell you, cats, if you're listening, if you go to Pete's store, if you drop yourself at Pete's store, he will let you in.
Don't 100%. Do it.
You meow 2 days on his doorstep, you're in. You hear me, cats? And that goes for other animals, too. Other animals.
Hey, turtles. Hey.
Especially turtles. Turtles.
Oh, Popeye
LePage. He'll have you in a tank. You'll just be in his bed and hanging around.
Pete, how'd you get a puma? I don't know. He just showed up one day.
Talking on the podcast. Let's talk about another comic. The Butcher's Boy, number 3, which this is a pretty scary book out here that we've been following from Dark Horse, written by Landry Q. Walker and Panel Vaughn, art by Justin Greenwood. It's a horror movie waiting to happen. It's a bunch of people who aren't super getting along, friends, lovers, acquaintances. They happen upon a town, they eat the meat, and then bad shit happens. Ugh. Yeah, you got to be careful.
Pull over. If you want to test if one of your friends is a psychopath, give them this comic and then make note of how they react to it. Because if this is somebody's favorite issue, run. Just fucking run. This is a fucked up issue, man. There is a lot of blood, a lot of guts, headless zombies, eyeball meat. Shit gets super crazy, man.
And I really liked it, though. Like, I thought it was well done. It was unsettling in the right way.
You liked it, did you?
I did. And I really like there's a reveal. I hear you. There's a reveal later on in the issue that I thought was really well played, well handled. We won't spoil that. But I just like this book did a great job of like showing us some horror in the first issue, then establishing the relationships, showing us some more horror in the second issue, and then really getting us with this third issue.
You can't read this in public, though. Like, people are going to be looking at you funny if you got this cracked open.
Oh, I put this on, I project this out of my car window when I'm driving around.
Oh, my God.
In New York. But if you like a great horror book, this is definitely one to pick up. Let's move on and talk about another book from Marvel, Black Widow Venomous Number 1, written by Erica Schultz, art by Luciano Vecchio. Now, this is – I don't know how people are talking about this, but Black Widow has a symbiote. She has a Venom-style symbiote that has bonded with her, and in this issue, it's sort of about their connection. It's we get a new sort of look for Black Widow with the symbiote involved, and it's her sort of getting to know this symbiote and training them.
Yeah, this is a big kind of training montage of her and her symbiote here. If you love training montages, This issue is for you. This is, you know, sometimes you got to sit your symbiote down and just be like, what are we doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
what are we doing work here? You're my goo suit. Well, you're my goop.
Yeah, like.
what are we goofing out here?
When I want you to turn into a mob of spiders, you fucking better do it. I'm Black Widow. Damn it.
Pete, you have a symbiote. What's sort of the vibe? What's the look? Are we going spiders? I think that's a little done. Like, what's another? Yeah, Puma?
Yeah. I mean, spiders would freak me out. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying.
You gotta kind of, yeah, just go with spiky shit. You know, I feel
spiky?
Like that's easiest.
I don't know. You ever put on how many clothes do you own that are spiky? You don't want to put on spiky stuff.
No, I'm saying the venom part of you just kind of, instead of turning into spiders, just turn into giant spikes and murder people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but what's the look of yours? Are you doing like just a, is it like a blue?
I like the Flash kind of venom suit where it's kind of like this kind of uniform kind of looking thing. You know what I mean? Flash
like
Thompson's, venom suit. It's pretty cool.
Nice. So it would be spiders or turtles, cats. Oh, you need a cat symbiote. A little goopy fur coming out there. That's Pete, right there.
Dude, that's creepy. That's creepy, that's dude.
I want a symbiote that it just looks like me. Also, you know.
Oh, weird.
So you just like a goopy
symbiote version of you, just like standing next to you.
When you get the symbiote on, it's just like a goopier you.
Oh,
it's like
God.
You on a hot day, essentially.
That's gross, man.
So I thought this issue was really, really nice. I think the art was excellent.
The art's unbelievable.
I like Black Widow with a symbiote. I think it's an interesting little turn for her. Mm-hmm. I don't love the redesign that comes here. It's not my favorite of those. I think Black Widow gets a lot of redesigns. But we are setting up for the fall, the rest of the summer into fall, the Venom War.
Ooh.
Where we're getting, I feel like we've had a Venom crossover almost every year.
Yeah.
Are we burning out on Venom? By we, I mean you, Pete.
Oh, we're getting close to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, we could be over Venoming a little bit. But I did want to just say the art's unbelievable in this comic. I do agree with you that what I like about Black Widow is her communication skills. And
I
feel like
that's what she's known for, is her communication.
Yeah, she can get to people. She can get things out of people. She's good at sharing stuff, you know. So
let me just highlight a couple things from the Venom War checklist.
Okay.
We get Venom War zombiates, so we're going to get some symbiotes on corpses, maybe. Interesting.
Ooh.
That's cool. And then the other one, Venom War, it's Jeff, number one.
Oh, no, Jeff's turned into a Venom?
I guess
so. Wow, that's going to be crazy.
I guess so. Something to look forward to. It starts next week and goes until Thanksgiving. So get ready for the Venom War, folks.
Oh, man.
The It's Jeff Venom War comic comes out on November 20th. So
that's just perfect.
Put a little shark goop in your mouth and hold on to it. But let's jump over to Forge number 9 from Image Comics, written by Greg Rucka and Eric Troutman, art by Mike Henderson. This comic is a big sci-fi magical epic that's been going on for a while, following sort of a team of almost alien-style space marines as they're getting caught up in this conflict with some magical beings that can sort of see the future. And some leaders in the space kingdom who are trying to, what we learned in this issue, is do some pretty nasty stuff to this alien species. Pete, have you been liking this?
Yeah, I think it kind of goes up and down a little bit, but overall I've been kind of I'm impressed with this. I think it's a very interesting idea. Glowing naked people and the robots and all that kind of stuff is a little crazy, but I do think
that's life, man.
Yeah,
life.
Yeah. You know, which one are you? Are you the guy in the robot or are you the glowing naked person? You know what I mean? Life is
tough.
I'm the latter.
Remember, I told you I wanted a symbiote of myself fully nude. Like, I'm wearing clothes and then my symbiote of me gets on me and that's naked.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
You know what I mean? Like,
no.
I'm nude on top, clothes underneath. I flip
no.
it. Flip the script.
Oh, my God.
I've been really enjoying this comic. It's a little dense at times, like a lot of Greg Rucka's stuff, but it's always worth it at the end, because Greg Rucka knows how to really build out a world. The Lazarus comic that he did for a ton of issues, I love that book. This is has that same depth of thought and understanding of the world they're trying to build. If you're like Battlestar Galactica, it feels sort of in that vein, but really enjoying this. Definitely worth checking out. Let's talk Ms. Marvel, annual number one, written by Iman Vellani and Sabir Prezada, art by Giada Belviso. This is a continuation of the Infinity Stone annual crossover, a classic summer annual event that I've been talking about for since we started doing this podcast, essentially. Your classic Vibranium Vendetta type crossover event, and we're getting it with the name of the event is the Infinity Watch, where we're getting these sort of not super well-known characters all have Infinity Stones. This issue is dealing with this guy named Multitude, who has the Soul Stone, and Ms. Marvel is sort of tangling with that situation, and then we get a backup following our guy Coulson as he continues on. Cheese Coulson, he continues on with his Deathstone saga. So how do you feel about this issue and this larger sort of Infinity Watch event?
Well, first off, I love Ms. Marvel. Great use of her. Love the art style. This is a great touching story. I also love her and Bruno, you know, will they, won't they, that kind of, you know, I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. Let me just ask you, though. I thought this was a blast, a ton of fun. Continues to be such a great Ms. Marvel story. Love the use of her in this. Just like brings a lot to this character in such a cool, interesting way. Love the use of her powers. The second story, though, and maybe this is just me, but I feel like there's pushing cheese on us. Like, I don't remember Coulson being called cheese, and all of a sudden now in comics they keep referring him to as cheese.
And well, here's the thing.
Did I miss it? Was it in the past and they're bringing it back? Like, it just seems like the cheese is coming out of nowhere.
He loved, he had cheese on his gravestone. If you put something on your gravestone, bad news. That's who you are.
Wow.
But
I feel like it's over at that point, so like, how can you put something on your gravestone? You're dead. Like, somebody else had to put the cheese up there.
You think a stranger put cheese on his gravestone? And by cheese, which means the word cheese.
You can't be like in front of your gravestone, like, don't murder me yet. I want to put this wheel of cheese up here.
Yeah, but gravestones don't appear like Infinity Stones when you die. You order them. Someone orders them.
Sure. Whoever orders them. I mean, I guess anybody can give somebody a nickname after they're dead. You know, I think it's a kind of messed up thing to do. Like, we're just calling him Cheese now. Like, is he the big cheese? Like,
no, he's
does
just
he just
cheese.
Have a love of cheese? Like, he's never talked about cheese before, ever. And now all of a sudden, he's just cheese.
Yeah, I feel like you are offended by this. And now I feel bad because I ordered a gravestone for you that said Pete, the human sexual dog LePage.
Well, you shouldn't do that. Because I'll come back and I'll haunt you.
Dude, it's already ordered.
I'll make your afterlife hell, bro.
No, you mean my life or my afterlife? Because once I die too, we're gonna fuck around. We're gonna have some fun.
You first, I'm gonna fucking murder you because of what you did to my fucking gravestone.
Pete, you can't haunt me any more than you already do when we're doing this podcast. I challenge you in death to come for me, sir.
I will.
Do you think you're going to be one of those ghosts that can touch stuff? Or are you going to be like one that just whispers? What's your ghost power going to be?
Oh, I'm definitely going to be able to touch stuff, dude.
Just like push a little.
I'll be able to channel my rage in a way that kind of physically, yeah.
You can only touch like shitty beer cans. I feel like that's.
I'll make it work,
Landshark.
Bro. Do you know how many shitty beer cans there are in the world? I would have control over
it. Especially around me. It's like Magneto for like frat Magneto. The thing this that I don't understand about this issue particularly is the use of the soul stone. We don't understand how it works. Multitude seems to be conjuring different heroes all the time. Hulk, Fing Fang Foom at one point, And
that was fun to see Fing Fang Foom. I'm a
it
sucker.
It was. It was. But I just, I wish we got an understanding. The Soul Stone's always been sort of a more mysterious one. But we don't really get to know who Multitude is or what the stone is doing. And so this feels a little bit just muddy as an issue. And it points to a larger issue with this event. I was liking how it was these stranger heroes or stranger people who have the power. But it just feels a little messy. And I want some sort of organizing principle happening here moving forward. And shouts to Cheese now and forever. Let's jump over
shouts
to Gra-
Swiss Cheese.
Yeah, shouts to all the cheese. He was maybe he just like ate a lot. He was like, you do one thing at an office party, just like, put a bunch of cheese in your mouth. Too much cheese. That's your nickname. That's it's on it. Your gravestone.
That's how it's done.
Grommets number 3 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender and Brian Posehn, art by Brett Parson. This comic, sort of maybe outwardly and perhaps inwardly, is about Rick Remender and Brian Posehn growing up in California. And just being kids that skateboarded and skipped school and messed around. It feels very real and drawn from their lives. Pete, this is a fun book. What do you have to say about it?
Yeah, I mean, the nostalgia factor for me is really high because I used to do this as a kid. I would ride around on my bike to the arcade or the skateboard to the arcade, whatever I had available. Scooters sometimes. It was just one of those things where this comic takes me back to a magical place, and not to show my age here, but it's happening. I love the art. It has such a vibe to it. To me, this is almost like Gravity Falls meets Mad Magazine. The detail, because it's funny because like there's certain comics or certain panels or whatever, you're like, oh my god, look at this. But I'm like looking in the background, I'm like, ooh, what game is this? Oh, this looks like it's this game. And okay, this is obviously Miss Pac-Man and other stuff, but it's just the walk, you know, like the showing the arcade. I wanted to see what every game was.
And we get the shout outs. There's a lot of featured games that are ripped out of the late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. They go to Spencer Gifts, which I thought was really fun. This
come
definitely,
on, dude.
Definitely speaks.
Who didn't hang out at Spencer's Gifts, bro? I mean, that was the best.
At least stop in.
Stopped. You got to look at some posters, you know, check it out.
Making the bowl out of a soda can. I have witnessed that many, many times in my life.
Oh, like, you have witnessed it. That's a great way to word it.
Yeah. I've been a witness. I've been a testifying witness to that event many times.
Wow.
I just was never the one to make it. Like, I'm not ashamed of saying that that's dope, and I've smoked out of one before. I'm just never the one that's like, I don't know how to do this. Stab, stab, stab. But yes, this is definitely it's a great story, and the art is great. But man, if you are, like you're saying, grew up in the 80s and 90s, it really hits you right where you want it to. So great read. Let's talk Immortal Thor number 13 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Oscar.
It's funny because this comic reminded me a little bit of our Comic-Con at the Sea, you know what I mean, where you had characters high when they shouldn't have been, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Characters. Wow. Now who's the witness? Immortal Thor 13, written by Al Ewing, art by Oscar Basil Duanava. Thor has been going through it. He has a comic being written about him that is sort of forecasting his adventures. He's had his brain ruined by the Roxxon Corporation. And now, naturally, he's going to see his buddy Hercules. And we're sort of in a different story where Hercules, Loki, and Thor are going to take on Zeus. We're getting some Pantheon crossover here. What do you think? I feel like this comic, I really like a lot of the ideas, but it feels strange to me that it set up this like big villain thing, the comic, and sort of tarnishing Thor's image in Midgard on Earth, and then they just keep moving away from it. And I just wanted to be like, no, let's do this for a while before we go and like now he's like fighting Zeus. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Al's making moves. He's got a lot he's working with here. But I do love this idea of Herc and Thor teaming up. They got a lot of history together, so that was great to see. We got a kind of different versions of Loki in this. So, yeah, I think this is fun. I love all the action, love all the twists and turns. I feel like we're just on the cusp of Al Ewing revealing his kind of big move here. So I'm nervously excited about what's going to happen. But then we get the bonus with the DP and the Wolves comic inside. And I was like,
yes.
Look at this tie-in. Just in enough time for a huge movie drop. Yeah, and this is just kind of silly fun. So enjoyable and great art.
There it is. Helvery number 3, also from Marvel Comics, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Julius Ota. Pete, this comic feels not only like it's right over the plate for you, but it feels a little bit like some turnaround revenge for you.
Yes.
Famously, Akira, formerly known as Dokken, sliced up the Punisher and turned him into Frankencastle. And now he has been sliced up and is reassembled like a Frankencastle. And you seem to be enjoying this.
My God. I mean, this is just... first off, this was a blast artistically. There's some just unbelievable panels in here. Spoilers, but there's some weird biting that goes on. And then Wolverine, like, rips a bad guy's jaw off. That was just fun. Oh, my God. I yelled out loud when I read that. I was like, yeah. Such great. And I felt very seen. If I was writing a comic, Dokken would die horribly. And I got to see that. So I feel, I know it's a last panel.
Mr. LePage, this is an Archie comic. You can't have a Marvel superhero murdered for no reason.
Yeah, I felt so seen, was so happy. I was like, yes, he's dead. I hope this stays forever. This is the last we ever see of him.
Oh, definitely not. This is the issue builds to a nice father-son moment. We're about to get Akira has been the Helverine up until this point, but a very small bit of a spoiler here. But at the end of the issue, we're going to get some capital W Wolverine as Helverine going forward.
Yeah,
I do think this has like some Garth Ennis Punisher vibes to it with a lot of the soldiery stuff we're doing. So that's cool, but it. This comic gets down and dirty. You get to see some nasty shit happen all the time. Like, if the word Helverine sparks joy for you, this is
yours.
Yeah. So just definitely get it. Let's talk Oddly Pedestrian
Amazing
Life.
Art.
Great art. Oddly Pedestrian Life of Christopher Chaos, number 11 from Dark Horse, written by Tate Bromball, art by Isaac Goodhart. This comic has done such a great job. So it's about a sort of a team that was really defined in this issue, their team of monsters or monster adjacent characters. And they have sort of come together, very like modern, now young monster characters coming together in this small town. And all of the different this issue is sort of saying a lot of people coming to get them. And we're meeting some of them. But I think this comic has done a great job of telling idiosyncratic versions of these monster stories that we all know. The Frankenstein story, we have some werewolves here, which are really good, but it's also building out a world in a really nice way. We're sort of starting to push out and see all the different people. The characters all feel very well thought of and emotionally there in a good way. So I've been loving this. Pete, how do you feel?
Yeah, this is a blast and really fun last panel. Amazing art. This continues to be very creative and interesting. I like the world building and the character designs and the different kind of attention to detail that you see in this comic. Goodhart is got a great heart, if you ask me.
Wow. And good heart, it. Great art, right?
Hey, there we go. Nice job, man.
Yeah, you bet.
This is a blast. Continues to be.
Let's talk about a comic that, you know, needs no introduction. One that we all honestly, we could just cut and paste another positive review on this one. Amazing Spider-Man number 54 from Marvel, written by Zeb Wells, art by Ed McGuinness. Let me just try to establish this. The soul of Green Goblin lives in Peter Parker because a spear stabbed it into him. There's a walking robot that is just a head that is trying to help them that Peter Parker has built and created. Norman Osborn is hanging out here, and the Green Goblin's soul keeps jumping back and forth between them, and it's like the evil parts, the sins of Green Goblin. Peter Parker seems confident that he can weather it, but he certainly can't. This is all... Meanwhile, in the background here, we have some just some other heroes hanging around, and we don't even really see their action, right?
So all you had to do was say it's a classic Sin Spear scenario. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've seen it so many times. It's just one of those things where somebody gets a Sin Spear and madness is going to sue, and then people are going to be jumping bodies left and right. Now, this was insane, okay? This was not enjoyable. This was all over the place. But I love Zeb Wells. And at the end of this, he gets you in the goddamn feels. He gets you in the feels. We go through Crazy Town, but come out in Emotions Town because... He got me choked up. I mean,
got you choked up. That's wild. I agree with you because the craziness that happens in this, like, first off, the character Rec Rap is unbelievable. This is
Ed
like
McGinnis draws the crap out of this. I love Ed McGinnis's art. This is fantastic, and you know, fun to see him with Rec Rap because it's a ridiculous character. But the way it's drawn, I'm like, oh, this is fun.
Rec Rap, I spun out of the Chasm event where this is like a weird magical thing who like hangs out.
It's Hulk Spider-Man. What's the problem?
Yeah, but he's stabbed with a goblin glider and it's just like making jokes about it and being fun about it. You get everyone gets like it's like tripping out at the end because they get hit. We don't see a fight off panel between Ms. Marvel with Otto Octavius arms, and then you've got the Lizard, Doc Connors, and is it J. Jonah Jameson who are just like tripping balls as they're walking out of there because there were drugs and Kraven's dart. And that's just. And then the amount of times that the Green Goblin sin soul thing goes between
switch back and forth,
Norman and Peter, I was like, crazy. What is happening here? Yeah. And one of the craziest things, though, that you never really see in comics is the issue ends, the action ends, and then there's a full page, the end. Which I was like, what? There's nothing you wanted to put there, guys? Another little thing?
Nope. Landed the ship.
Out the door we go.
I'll go ahead.
Finish I was up. Just going to say, this has been like a little bit all over the place. There's some good ideas here, but it just feels so, I don't even know how to hold on to it. It's like trying to hold on to water.
Yeah, I mean, the Sin Spear insanity got pretty crazy town. But I do think that there was some fun here with Rec Rap, you know, because if you're going to get stabbed with something, you're going to ask to keep it. You know what I mean? It's a part of you now. So I thought that was kind of fun. And also the I'm Lamp moment really made me think of Brick from Ron Burgundy saying, like, I love Lamp.
I love Lamp.
So, yeah, it was a fun kind of thing. So I love Zeb's sense of humor. And he took us to Crazy Town, but then, you know, had some nice, sweet ending where Green Goblin and Spider-Man may be closer than they've ever been after this, which is kind of adorbs.
What you've really turned the page here on this book. Is that because Zeb Wells is a credited writer of the Deadpool movie?
Oh, I didn't even know that. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Cool.
I guess not. Wow, I thought I had you there. I thought I got you.
This has been... You know, hated, weird, crazy. But when it finished, I thought, you know, after all that, kind of end in a sweet spot, I was like, oh, Zebbies, you didn't let me down.
Oh, Zebbies, you've done it again. Yeah. Great. Looking forward to our next classic Sin Spear situation. See you on Friday.
It's coming.
Night.
Yeah, it's coming. Don't you worry about it.
Let's close it out with X-Men Heir of Apocalypse number 4 from Marvel Comics, written by Steve Fox, art by Netho Diaz. Perhaps the comic that is...
What a time not to have Zalbin.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I can't believe we're talking about this without Alex here.
Yeah.
And we... So this series has been sort of almost a Krakoa hangover story, where it's Apocalypse dealing on Arako, sort of choosing who's going to take over. It's not like he's going anywhere, but I think he just wants to have an heir, someone to keep the work going. Mm-hmm. Here are his options. He's got Cable, Forge, mm-hmm. busy with X-Force, can't be an heir, but he's definitely an option. We've got Magic, or no, sorry, we have Danny Moonstar, who Dark Horse candidate to take over for Apocalypse, but I do love her. And then, of course, we have... Cypher. Yeah. And we will spoil the end of this in just a second, but this it's a strange comic to read, but I actually really enjoyed this issue. I like the way that we did it was sort of treated like a reality show where Apocalypse went to each of them and was like, you want to take over this? Do you? And then next, like a Cable, we used to fight, but I trust you. I was like, this is such a fun little weird thing. But spoiler, the spoiler is I'm going to say now is Cypher is the new Apocalypse going by the name of Revelation.
Yeah, Cypher gets a makeover, everyone's least favorite character except for Alex Zalbin, who loves him for some reason. Yeah, he gets a makeover, he's the new baddie, pulling a, oh my god. Can't even Robert Downey Jr. here was saying, I'm going to jump to the bad side. Apocalypse kind of comes to people and it's like, he talks people up. He's like, you know, I've always liked you. Sure, we're enemies and I've murdered thousands, but you know who's my favorite? You are. Weird moments in this. I really love the art. It has such a cool old school vibe to it, which I very much enjoy. Yeah, I just don't understand why anyone would take a meeting with Apocalypse and then kind of hear him out. I guess you kind of got to, but yeah. Cypher's the only one.
He's had a tough go of it.
Get lost afterwards. Yeah, Cypher's I'm tired of people making fun of me. I'm going to show them. I'm going to be Revelation or Revolution or...
No, it's Revelation, which is
revolting.
Funny. He's actually mad. He's coming for you and I because we've been making fun of him a lot. I think it's funny, though, like he chooses Doug, and then Doug gets out of like a little Apocalypse coffin, and he has the same haircut as Apocalypse. He looks like he's jacked suddenly. I don't know. This whole turn into Revelation, I was like, that's a little weird. I would have kept some of his Doug look without making him like golden Apocalypse.
Yeah, I mean, Apocalypse has got a kind of style. You know what I mean? He likes formidable kind of, you know, so he's not going to let Cypher just kind of be Cypher.
But you don't have to, when you're an heir, you don't have to just like immediately be.
I mean, you got to. I mean, Apocalypse, you know, he's kind of, he's old school. You got to be, you know. And it was interesting because Cypher was like, yeah, I'm tired of people not listening to me. They brought up the whole Krakoa situation and the island. He was the only one who kind of spoke to Fuck Island there and got what was going on. So weird turn. But, you know, you can never trust the nerdy guys. You know what I mean? You can't really. Yeah. And, you know, maybe, you know, since Alex, you know, to pull back the curtain here because he does all of our post-production stuff. Maybe he can insert his opinion now, but I'll just do it in case he doesn't want to do the extra work. So here's what Alex thinks of this new route. I went to Cornell and I'm very smart. I know that because I talk about how smart I am all the time, and Cypher can do whatever he wants because he's the greatest. So there's Alex's official opinion.
It's very funny that you did an impression to do Alex, something that you hate when he does. But I feel like Alex is here because he's becoming our revelation, and he's going to be coming for you at the end of this. Very fun. Lots to talk about in the future. A lot more revelations to encounter. Folks, that's the show. Please come hang out. We're here every week with a new episode of The Stack. We also, if you like
thanks
comics,
for listening.
You might want to check out our live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. And then you can download the podcast any which place you like. We also have a news podcast called Comic Book Club News that comes every weekday with all the news that's fit to print in your earballs.
And we got a Deadpool Wolverine review in the Marvel Vision podcast.
Yes, podcast feed. Check that out. We've talked a little bit about it, but we go in deep on all of our takes fresh after seeing the movie. We've got a new episode coming where we are drafting our favorite perfect Justice League team, a superhero draft where we each pick our Justice League teams where we can't overlap with each other. It's going to be very fun. If you love this show, please support us. Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/comicbookclub. You can subscribe to all of our podcasts on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. Check us out on Twitter.
Comic Club Live.
Oh, Comic Book Live on Twitter and X. You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Comic Book Club Live. And of course, go to our website, comicbookclublive.com, for all of this, all podcasts, and so much more. And if you need me, I'm going to be hanging out fully nude in my symbiote that looks like me. The Blood Hunt is over!
Oh, no.
Sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. Occasionally.